Hey there, you're listening to Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies.
If you enjoy what you hear, go to the iTunes store and leave a review for us. It really helps us get noticed.
And if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can check out our Facebook page. Just search Filmed in Canada Podcast. And you can also reach us by email at filmedincanada@gmail.com.
And feel free to go to our website, filmedincanada.net, for our other content and to leave a comment.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm good. I love life. I love movies. I love TV shows. I love music. It's all good, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're listing the things that make it worth living, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw The Spy Who Dumped Me recently. It's actually pretty good.
Okay.
Mila Kunis and what's her name from SNL?
Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they become unwitting spies because they're trying to find her ex-boyfriend who turns out to be a spy.
Oh, okay.
So it's all like spies versus spies, et cetera.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was going to go see Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Fallout.
More spies.
But I didn't get to it because I was reluctant to go to like a 3D showing.
Mm.
And then I saw that the IMAX screen, quote unquote IMAX screen in Richmond, had it not in 3D. But then I waited too long. And then last weekend they replaced it with an IMAX presentation of Mile 22. The Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, thing, yeah.
And then I was just like, yeah, well, I'll wait again. So anyway, I mean, not that I have a preference to not see it in 3D, but
yes.
I mean, it doesn't like prevent me from going to see it.
Yeah.
It was just like, I missed the chance to see it on the quote unquote IMAX screen and not 3D. So did you see it already?
I haven't seen it yet, but former guest of the show, Devin Scott, was telling me how he saw it in D-Box.
Okay.
I guess the D-Box seats were just free, so he decided he'd hop in one and see how it went. Oh. And I guess I didn't know that you could turn it off.
Really?
Which is interesting. So I guess you could, if you wanted to, you could just pay a few bucks more to get the best seats in the house kind of thing, if you consider those the best seats in the house.
Mm. Not sure if I do.
Yeah, he said it was not worth the ticket price.
He didn't pay for a D-Box
seat. Admission. That's correct, yes.
But he sat in a D-Box seat.
Right.
And it was activated?
Yeah, I guess they just all turn on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've never tried it, and I didn't know if they're selectively, you had to buy a ticket or not, but
I
guess it makes sense that they'd be all turned on too.
Yeah, I feel like Cineplex would not have the technical capability of tracking who was D-boxing and who wasn't.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of theaters.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you about an experience that I had at the local hipster cinema.
The Rio?
That's right. Yeah. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I went to a movie and I intended to pay cash and I had some loose loonies. Those are the $1 coins for those outside Canada. So I had a couple of loose loonies. I had a roll of quarters and two rolls of dimes.
Ooh.
And you're wincing.
I don't like where this is going.
Well,
they did not accept the quarters and the dimes?
The cashier did not accept. No, he didn't accept any of it. When I put it on the counter and I said, hey, sorry, this is all I got right now in terms of cash, right? And he just said, like, I can't take that. Like, he just refused to take my money. And I was like, well, it's just money.
I feel like maybe a convenience store or a grocery store, but like, yeah.
Because
they're doing more cash transactions, they're actual cashiers that are better equipped to count change. Because like you wouldn't just accept a roll of quarters and just assume that it's got 50 in it.
A roll of quarters is $10. This is true, but we could count it out if you suspect, like, I'm going through the trouble to shortchange you 25
cents. Yeah, I just don't see that happening at the Rio. Yeah.
Why is that place a place of business that accepts money for its services. Why are they better than a convenience store? Like, why do they choose what they can accept as payment?
Well, it's like the Seinfeld episode where George is getting the calzones for George Steinbrenner, the head of the Yankees. And, he's like in a meeting one day. So he needs Kramer to go get them. And, Kramer's clothes are wet. So he asks, can the guy put his clothes in the oven to dry them out? And then he gets the calzones, but then he tries to pay with change. He throws a bunch of pennies on the table. He's like, hey, I don't take no change. So that's why, man, they just don't take change. Yeah. If Seinfeld taught me anything.
I know where you're going with that, but I mean, I think I know what you're trying to put those things together, yeah. but I didn't plop a bag of change on his counter. Right?
No, I know. Yeah. I know.
No. You think I'm wrong?
I don't think you're wrong. I just think.
You think is that their discretion whether they should take it or not?
Yeah.
Okay. You seem like you're on the fence on it. Or
I'm kind of coming around to your position. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. But anyway, so he said he wouldn't take it.
Right.
By the way, I wasn't like trying to be a jerk about it. It was because when you use cash, you get change back.
Yeah.
And I gather it up. And I don't keep it in a loose bag.
Right.
Keep it loose in a bag. I roll them up so I know how much I have. And
yeah.
It just, that day, it just felt like, hey, I got some
good
change.
Good day to get rid of it, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to, I kind of felt like, hey, man, I'm going to get a free movie out of this because I saved this change, right?
Yeah.
But he wouldn't take it. He said, you can give me actual cash or a card. And to that, I kind of say like, well, that's kind of jerky, you know,
yeah.
to say.
I would think that they probably don't do very many cash transactions.
No, but cash is still king, you know?
Yeah.
It's faster. I mean, I've gone to that theater before where their card machine doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you got to go to the bank and pay your fee and get some money to come back and buy the ticket, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you're not set up to take payments, then, you know, make up your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I emailed the theater just to say like, hey, I just want to know if that's your standard policy or was there some misunderstanding? And they haven't replied. So.
Yeah.
I guess, which is not a surprise.
And in the news next week, the Rio is bought out by Cineplex.
No, didn't they meet their...
No, I'm just joking because Cineplex, especially in your experience, has
just like another
poor customer service.
Another more shitty management.
Yeah.
Well, considering that it's like the business model that is an instant money loser, I guess, you know, only losers run theaters.
Yeah.
But they met their fundraising goal, is
That's
what I understand.
Right. Yeah.
So,
and
you know,
I think
they're too cool to accept cash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
Have you ridden transit recently?
I have not.
Did you know those public announcements by Seth Rogen? You remember,
did
you
I did hear about that, yeah. Yeah. And I think he might be doing it in Toronto as well.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Shouldn't Toronto get their own favorite son?
I guess Drake.
You see the biggest son of Toronto right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Big time.
I think it should be a woman, actually.
Right.
For the reason that I think you would hear a woman's voice more clearly over the rumble of transit.
Mm.
So,
and Seth Rogen does have a particularly low voice, I think.
Not super low, but I mean, it's kind of, it seems like it's at that same level. So
yeah.
It's hard to hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
It's too bad.
Yeah.
Like, is he cracking jokes or?
He's not cracking jokes, but it's kind of light where he's like, hey, Vancouver, it's your buddy Seth kind of a thing. And, like, and don't hold the doors open because people think you're a jerk. It's kind of that kind of a thing. which is fine. But it's not always playing. It seems like.
There's other voices or?
No, it's just like that message doesn't play all the time.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just your usual, your next stop is. And
right,
then,
right.
And then like once every 10 trips, I'll hear his voice.
Yeah.
Because he was reportedly the replacement, though he volunteered his time to do the recordings, the replacement voice for Morgan Freeman.
Yes. That was some visa tie-in that was only supposed to last a few months, I think, and it was only at certain stops.
Okay. It seemed like a weird thing that
they were doing it to promote the tap. You could tap your credit card on the machine
to pay
so you don't have to buy a ticket.
Oh, yeah. I see. So, but it's not restricted to Visa, is it?
No, but I guess he, maybe for like the first month it was visa only so that they could promote it and get Morgan Freeman on there, but then he turned out to be a dick. So, in related.
Allegedly.
In related Me Too news, there was some shitty movie that Kevin Spacey was in that apparently made $100 at the box office on its opening weekend.
A new movie? A new movie with Kevin Spacey. I didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. So the public and the box office have spoken.
Yes.
Okay.
Surprised that it even got a release.
Yeah. I didn't hear about it. What was the name?
Because like Louis C.K.'s one... They just scrapped altogether.
Didn't that
It premiered at TIFF, but then after TIFF, the
didn't
stuff
Didn't it at least open
him,
in New York and L.A.?
No.
No? Okay.
Yeah. They did not release it at all.
Well, then that's the company speaking, not the public speaking.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it just seems like especially if you're only going to make back $100, like it's just not worth
no,
putting
not
in
at
theaters.
All. Yeah. It's probably not even like pressing the whatever the hard drive or whatever that comes on.
Yeah.
It seems. Well,
so we're talking about Canadian movies. There was a bit of Canadian content in the previous opening segment, but today we're here to talk about a documentary available on the Knowledge Network at, is it just knowledge.ca?
Yes.
For free, called, is it Conaline?
I think it's Conaline?
Conaline, yeah.
Maybe.
Conaline, Our Beautiful Land, a documentary about northern BC and the various communities and business interests that exist there, and lots of graphic hunting scenes.
Lots of hunting, yeah. It's near Dease Lake, if that's any reference point for people.
Yeah.
I guess it's close to Alaska, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Looking at a map of BC, it just didn't occur to me how much of Alaska was actually like bordering on the western coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, learned some geography today.
Well, it does open with this striking overhead shot of the forest, and then it kind of fades between that and like a map.
Yeah,
I thought that was an interesting effect, like an interesting optical effect where you could see like the representation on a map made real by the trees. And
yeah, that happens a few times, and you see the riverbanks that they're kind of prospecting on and whatnot. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's kind of a beautiful shot.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, so I guess the movie kind of blends together a lot of issues that I guess are prevalent in our province right now, whether it's I guess land rights doesn't really come up, but the First Nations community in the area, is it Talton?
That's right, Talton.
They're disputing a mine being built there mainly due to the pond that would need to be constructed and the impact that would have on the local wildlife. You have some of the people working on the mine. You don't really get much of the corporate perspective, I guess.
Well, we see the workers
yeah.
who are doing different things, like the ones who are like setting up the power lines.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think we get into like the mining camp or anything. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a kind of a hunting expedition company that is transporting horses up there so that they can run these hunting expeditions that are being impacted to some degree by this mining because they're drilling in areas where a lot of the game that they're hunting are where their normal habitat is, and so they're being pushed out. And then you also just have slice of life type stuff with some of the locals as well as some of the First Nations peoples in the area.
Yeah. There's also more locally in that community, there's that guy who is trying to record his language or something?
Right.
Who, his father is dying, but he's... I wrote his name down here somewhere. Oscar Dennis. He's working on his master's thesis by... It sounds like he's trying to document or explain the Talton language.
Yeah, just by getting his father, who's suffering from Alzheimer's, to say different phrases. I guess he's attempting to create an overall grammar for the language just by piecing those things together.
Yeah.
So that seems like a challenging task.
Yeah. And then he would be like one of the few people who maintain it at that point. So that's quite a feat.
So I guess it's kind of a catch 22 with this movie. Like, I like that it does just kind of present all of these people and what they do and doesn't really take a stance. But then at the same time, it's kind of a balance between this lyrical ode to the wilderness and this more of an activist documentary that's attempting to critique the mining interests, but it doesn't really go too far in either direction, I guess, at least from my estimation. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Certainly the perspective of the pro argument for mining is not in the movie.
Yeah.
But it more is concerned with like capturing how people live in that area now, almost like preserving it in case it's gone. And
because I guess there are some people who see the mine as a plus in the sense that it's bringing resources, it's bringing jobs, it's bringing infrastructure to the area, and then others that just see it as an invasive practice that shouldn't be undertaken. The one question, or at least one question that I have in my mind is like, what is gold being mined for anymore, other than jewelry?
Don't you stockpile it so that your nation's currency has more value? Yeah. Isn't like the dollar based on like how much gold reserves you have?
No, I don't think so. I feel like I remember from my economics classes that they got rid of the, whatever that's called, the gold.
Gold standard?
The gold standard. The gold standard's gone.
Okay.
I think. I mean, I think countries might still stockpile gold, but I don't think there's a gold standard anymore.
I think the idea of stockpiling gold or investing in gold is that it is like your backup plan in case cash fails.
Right.
Yeah.
But cash isn't failing at this point.
By the way, coins, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, coins are symbolic of like being a piece of precious metal. So it goes back to like the very root of the monetary system. I just wanted to say.
So fuck you, Rio Theater.
No, I'm not saying fuck you. I mean, you guys, you know, I think you provide a service to the community. Just saying, if I show up with gold, will you turn me down?
I think they would. It just seems pointless to mine for gold. I'm sure there are some practical uses for it in terms of like maybe in some electronics. There might be small amounts of gold in like computer chips or like, something
isn't
like that.
Isn't that why lithium and things like that are mined?
Yeah,
because it has industrial uses.
Yeah,
when
I don't know that gold really has much of industrial use though, because it's like a soft metal.
No, it has value because it's gold.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you mine it.
Yeah.
When you talk about value, an interesting point was where the guy was talking about the drill that they use to like get their core samples, ore samples. I think core samples is right. And he holds up that thing and he says, this is the diamond bit of the drill.
Yeah.
And he said it's $1,200.
Yeah.
Which is... the worth of diamonds also in industrial use, it seems like it makes more sense than its use in jewelry.
Yeah.
Where if you had a diamond that was good enough to mount on a ring, that's several thousand dollars versus however many diamonds it takes to make a drill.
Yeah.
It's $1,200. So I just thought it was an interesting
I don't know. Maybe I'm just an idiot and like I just don't see the point in it. It's just like, we've got enough gold jewelry, just like melt that shit down if you need to make more, but like, just who cares about having a gold watch? I guess a lot of people do, but it's just like, it just seems fruitless. Like, I don't know.
The reason to get it is purely one of greed. It's because it's traded at a high value.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no like benefit to society to have more gold.
Yeah,
I agree. But I mean, that's not the motivational attitude of a mining company, right? A mining company is just like, this thing is worth a lot of money, so we should get some. Which is also why I think certain at certain times they'll shut down a mine because it's not worth their trouble anymore. Okay, so the mining perspective is missing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like you needed it.
Well, I mean, you get a bit of it, and I guess there's the one individual who's part of the Tahltan Nation that is working for the mining company, and he's kind of like, well, it's like giving me a job. There's not much I can do kind of thing, even if he's opposed to it.
Mm-hmm. It seems like when you boil it down to the local level, if somebody could have a job, I guess that is the positive spin that the movie offers, is like some people will get a job for a while. Yeah. Hmm. You're right, Alexander. So you're not stupid.
What's this?
You found the positive spin on mining.
Right.
Yeah.
We struck gold.
I did like the attitude of the movie, though, that neutral attitude of the movie, where it didn't seem to be casting judgment on people. Like the hunters, there's a huge hunting community and hunting tourist community in that area, and I don't think the filmmakers are casting judgment on them. They're just saying they're observing, like, this is what people do in this area. This is why people come to the wilderness.
I don't know how necessary it was to like show the skinning and beheading of a moose on camera. I don't know.
Well, not necessary, but certainly it's something to behold. Yeah, so there's a father and son, it looks like.
Yeah.
So they go hunting for a moose, and they kill a cow. By cow, I mean female moose. Is that the right? Is it cow?
I don't know.
All right.
Sure. We'll
have to look that up.
A moose cow?
But they... and then the filmmakers stay there while they quarter it and load it into the truck. And it's very graphic. It gives me an appreciation of the work involved with slaughtering an animal.
Mm.
I'm kind of appreciative that the filmmakers didn't shy away from that. Considering all the hunters that are interviewed in the movie, that's the only real like bloody hunting scene we see.
Yeah. The other aspect that was kind of disturbing in terms of like treatment of animals was when they're trying to get the horses across the river.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, just slapping this thing, and, like, it doesn't want to go in the water, and they're just, like, hitting it, and, like, it just, again, especially given that they're part of the tourism group that are just there for rich people to go and kill animals. Like, I get it if you live there and like, that's just your way of kind of living off the land. But commercial hunting, I think might be more pointless in my mind than mining for gold. although to the same point, if you're buying meat from a slaughterhouse out of a grocery store, if you go and kill it yourself and you know that it's not being tortured, maybe that's better. I don't know.
There's a lot of gray zones in that.
But
I kind of feel like I have no moral authority to judge people on killing animals.
Right.
I wouldn't kill an animal to have a trophy,
right?
And I don't have the skills to kill an animal to get its meat, but you know, maybe if I had to, I think there's, if you're doing it because you have to survive for the meat, I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
Just so you could display some animal's antlers on your walls, I think is a bit senseless.
Actually,
all that stuff with that woman Heidi, who like runs this this outfitting and horse riding business. Well, she looked really hardy. Like, holy shit, the work that she does.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
That looked like hard work to have that kind of a business and to maintain your animals. Like, these are people who really live in the woods, right? So it makes me feel very soft. Going back to the moose slaughter, there's a close-up shot of the blood draining out of the moose.
Yeah.
And it pools on the grass into like this, almost in a pile.
It was more of like a foam.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I just thought that was like weirdly beautiful. So there's a lot of striking images in this movie.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of beautiful images in this movie.
Yeah.
And maybe because it has this attitude of not judging people for their activities, specifically hunters, like not taking that stance of like just observing what hunters are doing because it's meaningful to them, not necessarily what the audience or the filmmakers might, what judgment they might place on it. It seems like at the same time, you see images and you don't see them as a good thing or a bad thing for nature or the people around it. It's just like images that by themselves are beautiful.
Right.
There's also like all the construction of those, the towers for the power lines.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh my God, look at all these giant metal towers that are taking over the landscape. It was like images of, like amazing images of helicopters flying these huge things in.
Yeah, totally. That was really cool.
Yeah, and like teams of men trying to receive the tower from the helicopter and like placing it into a very precise position. It was really amazing. So,
I guess in that way, it reminded me of Manufactured Landscapes that I talked about with Paige Smith. Which is a documentary about Edward Wertinsky's photography. And he captures these very striking, beautiful images of the tar sands or these chemical spills or just landfills. Like you see these landfills in China where there's literally, I want to say like tens of thousands of tires piled on top of each other. And they create these abstract contours because they're kind of stacked on top of each other and weighing each other down. And so they create these lines and everything. It is interesting when you can capture something that when you sit back and think about it is, you know, you might not agree with on a moral level or just think that it's superfluous in the sense of this mining or whatever. But when you can actually create a beautiful image out of that, I think that's, it's certainly commendable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, Manufactured Landscapes, did you notice that was also available streaming on knowledge.ca?
Did not notice.
Yeah, but I think it says it expires like mid-September. So everybody wants to take advantage of that, do so before mid-September. I recall you recommend it. Is that right?
I do. Yes. I do indeed.
There was one moment in going back to Conolina. There was one moment where I thought the filmmakers were making a kind of a visual pun. I'll recount it to you. Tell me if you agree. But
yeah,
it's like that. There's these two guys who are tracking the bighorn sheep. I wasn't sure if they were primarily hunting with bows or if they had like rifles and bows.
Yeah, it looked like it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So they went up to a hill and they're looking through binoculars and they say they don't see any males, right? There's no sheep with like giant horns that are worth killing. And so one of them says something like, oh yeah, they're all so small. And then the movie cuts to like a wide shot of the two of those hunters like walking in the woods, except it's like, so far away that they're dwarfed by the landscape.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did you catch that moment?
I saw it. I didn't catch it in that sense, but
yeah. I thought maybe there was like a little tongue in cheek moment from the editor.
Yeah,
doing that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I really have much more to say about the movie. Would you be good to go on to our comparative rating system?
Do you mind if I just kind of for the record or for our listeners just mention that it was directed by Nettie Wilde, who's been making films since the 80s, and another critically acclaimed documentary by hers was A Place Called Chiapas from 1998. I haven't seen that, but it's one of those movies that comes up a lot when, like, if you do a search for, like, Canadian films or Canadian documentaries, that one comes up a lot. So,
okay.
So maybe at some point we got to check that one
out. What's that called again?
A Place Called Chiapas.
Okay.
So about is, I'm going to sound ignorant, but I think it's in Mexico or set outside Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So her films are very, like, socially informed or like politically informed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so Conaline is her fifth feature documentary, which I'm surprised when I saw that on her IMDb profile. I was surprised it was only her fifth feature, considering she's been working since the 80s. Surprised compared to my zero feature documentaries. But I guess she works behind the scenes for a lot of other kinds of productions too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. A graduate of UBC.
Very nice.
Would you go out to this area, the Stikine River Valley?
I don't really know what I would do.
You wouldn't go to hunt?
No.
Yeah.
I guess just to camp?
Okay. It looks cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks beautiful, but it doesn't look particularly welcoming.
Mm.
So
at one point, the guy who's transcribing the language, he's kind of pontificating on the lake, and he says, like, I think he says something along the lines of, like, I don't feel welcome here anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
That he needs to kind of go off somewhere else.
Yeah, it seemed like he was saying he feels like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
All the mine and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the movie is going to serve ultimately as a historical record of what was there.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Was it the guy in the orange overalls on the cliffside? Because I think he was like a mine worker or whatever, but didn't he say that he worked on the tar sands in Alberta? And he was saying, like, it was just devastating to the landscape.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And he said, like, I hope they think twice before doing it here.
Right.
So, that's any sort of indictment of what's to come. Another thought that strikes me is, like, there's lots of wilderness in British Columbia and elsewhere in the country that really does seem wild still. And I think it's because there's in such remote areas that there's not enough voices to call for the protection.
Right.
So I think for most people, when the mine opens, if it hasn't already, I don't think anyone will notice, except the people living there.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that's on my day-to-day radar.
No.
What the pipeline really is because it's like going through
potentially
our municipality.
Yeah, potentially it'll be. I mean, there's already pipelines in through the city,
yeah.
But they want to expand them. It's always going to be at a local level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the people who get worked up about that sort of industrial development, industrial encroachment on their land, all that, the despoiling of the land, it's the people who are there, which is why they always, like in the examples of, like, oil companies in the United States, they target poor communities as the places where they're gonna ram their pipelines through. They're not gonna go through an affluent community, or they're not necessarily gonna go through a city.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna go through an area where there's not enough people to defend it. So, just an observation.
Yeah,
yeah.
Life is pointless.
You've really turned around since the beginning of this episode.
I mean, I still like movies.
Okay.
I don't know. Thinking about the, like, this mining shit, and it's just like, we've all got our fucking phones and whatever. Like, what is the point of all of it?
Oh. Really?
Just the whole deal.
Just back up. What's the point of caring, or what's the point of, like, wanting to get a new phone?
Yeah, just all of it. Life, phones, television.
It's a good question. I don't have that answer.
Yeah,
it's something I that's something that goes through my mind least every day. least once every day. Yeah.
Once a day. Yeah.
Even like the things that you take pleasure in, sometimes I guess I just have to speak for myself. Sometimes I look at the things I take pleasure in and I do wonder, like, well, you know, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
For that fleeting moment of not caring about the rest of the stuff.
perfect example. I've spent like 5 years of my life at this point fully invested in the On Cinema at the Cinema franchise, and I'm wearing my Victorville Film Archive hat right now.
In a striking yellow.
And it's just like, I love it, but it's literally the most pointless thing in terms of like actually providing any sort of value to the world. I don't know. I mean, I guess making people laugh is important.
It is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's certainly a service that we don't provide.
No.
But I like your hat.
Right.
I'm glad that you took pleasure in attending that event.
Yes.
You got to boil it down to your local level and like find something that makes it worth your time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all we can do. So I can't really hold it against people who want to pay $35,000 to go on a hunting trip. Or do I? I do hold it against them. You should spend your money on something more good for the world than like, killing animals. That's I take back what I said before. That's a shitty thing to do, to just like go trophy hunting. But I feel like I don't want to be harsh on the people who make a living off of being outfitters for it,
because right.
I mean, you're providing a service. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. That sounds so hypocritical.
I mean, what really we should do is kidnap college students and let rich people hunt them.
I think dumb
Americans that travel through Europe.
Mm.
Of course, I'm referring to the plot of the Hostel movies.
I know. I haven't seen it, but I know that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, the tweak to that is you kidnap rich people
and feed them to rich people.
No, you kidnap rich people and then you start a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe for people to buy tickets to come in and beat them. And then once it reaches a certain level, you let those, you have to reach your, your goal, right? And so once you've reached your goal, then those contributors can come in and kick the shit out of a rich person.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like reverse bum fights.
Yeah, kind of.
I'm in favor.
I wanted to say that I'm not endorsing kidnapping and beating people for money.
No. Certainly not.
Yeah. Should we wrap this one up, Alexander?
Yes.
Okay, because I don't want to bring you down any further.
It's kind of a toss-up for me in terms of what this movie compares to. We've talked about Haida Gwaii at the Edge of the World a while ago, and then I was thinking Kanasatake, whatever,
128 days later. No.
No, it's like some hundreds of years of resistance.
168. I'm going to say 168.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You eliminate it to those two?
I don't know. Do you have any other ideas?
Oh, those are fine. We don't have the limit to the ones we've seen, but those are fine.
Yeah.
You don't want to compare it with the Bertinsky movie?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
Because I think that's a good, you brought it up, and I think it's a good comparison, because it has that
same. You've
seen
it as well, yeah?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
I might rewatch it on knowledge.ca.
Yeah.
But in terms of its tone, that it's kind of, the camera acts as like a quiet observer of what's going on. I think it's similar.
In that movie, Bertinsky actually explicitly says that he's not a politically motivated artist. Which I find to just be total bullshit, given that he only focuses on environmental degradation due to industrialism. I feel like that's just inherently a political statement. I don't know.
What if he just finds beauty in that?
Well, yeah, but like the fact that he compiles it all and then puts it on display for people to see, like, I think it's very difficult to make a solid argument for why any art is not political in some way.
Okay.
So, but yeah, they're both kind of, like you say, they're observant. I guess there's more people in Konnalina and less landscapes, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'm good with either of any of those three that you
mentioned. Yeah, no, I do think manufactured landscapes is a better comparison though. And one that's more fresh in my mind, I guess, which helps. I don't know. I'm going to say manufactured landscapes -2.
Oh, okay. That's not too far off from how I feel about it.
Yeah.
In fact, that might be exactly where I feel about it. Yeah. So they're pretty close. I like them both. So I'm going to also say manufactured landscapes -2.
Cool. Anything else? Any other anecdotes about theater management?
Not yet, but okay. I'll go to a movie this weekend and get some fresh things to bitch about.
What are you
going to
see?
Yeah. Well, maybe Mission Impossible, but also maybe Black Klansman.
Mm. Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right.
Cool.
Okay, well, let's we'll keep on keeping on.
Yeah. Catch you next time.
Thanks.